Good morning. This is Sunday, June 15th, and it's Father's Day here in America. And today, as I got up from a morning meditation, I wondered, what could I give to the Father? You know, it's one of those situations, what do you give someone that has everything? Well, the only thing I could come up with is the same thing I give the Father every Sunday, and that is my emptiness. Here am I. Use me. Pour forth a blessing. And so that was my prayer, and I guess it's Father's Day every Sunday, and actually, it's Father's Day Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, too, because that's my prayer most of the time. And oddly enough, that's the name of this chapter, is prayer. We're going to discuss prayer. As you know, we are continuing our study of Consciousness Transformed, the 6364 Hawaii Hotel Talks by Joel Goldsmith, talks which he said we have to assimilate, put into practice, make our own, make bone of our bone, in order to rise into mystical consciousness. And so this is a series of classes which was directed at advanced students or advancing students, students that are no longer seeking persons, places, or things, but rather to be an instrument for God. And so the name of this chapter is September 2nd, 1963, Prayer of the Righteous Man, God Is. Very strange, too, God Is. And I'll tell you about that a little later, because this came to me in exactly 10 years later, in 1973. And perhaps it was Joel imparting it, or Christ, or God, I don't know. But I got the same message before I ever laid eyes on this. Now, I hope those of you hearing these talks are in a place where you can put these principles in practice, and you're not just listening for something to give you a sort of Sunday sermon, something you can listen to and then get up and go about your business. Hopefully by now you are surrendering all that and coming into a consciousness of selflessness. So he begins this chapter by saying, oh, after this chapter we'll have six more, maybe seven, and then this study will be complete. Of course, it won't really be complete until you put it into practice and see what it does for you then. So he starts this chapter by saying, truth is a shocking experience, and those who are not prepared for a continuous bombardment of shocks should not undertake the search for truth. And I can give that a hearty amen. I remember the very first time it occurred to me that, well, here in the States, we grew up watching black and white television shows such as Leave It to Beaver and Father Knows Best and The Nelsons. And in those shows on TV, on television, they always depicted sort of the perfect family. The father was the head, and he was the decision maker, but he was kind and benevolent. The mother was in charge of the house. In those days, not too many mothers worked yet. So the mother was in charge of the house, and she was very wise and loving and kind and generous. And then there were the children, which were trying to learn how to grow up, and the lessons. And often the lessons in each episode, each weekly episode, would have to do with honesty and integrity and things like that. And in 1972, when I first picked up The Art of Meditation and began a serious study, I saw that, well, no, it wasn't then, it was 1973, exactly 10 years after this talk that Joel gave. My wife at that time, and we were both really children, both teenagers, she ran off with a friend and never came back, took our son with her. And I was devastated, more than devastated. I suppose if some doctor had come along, he might have said nervous breakdown, which is what they called them then, and given me a lot of drugs or something, maybe even locked me away, I don't know. But fortunately, Don told me that, he said, most people would get out of this by transferring their love to another woman, but you'd be just as dependent on the next one, because what you're feeling is not from love. It's from dependency. And so he said, the only way you can really get free is to transfer your love to God. And so I went into The Art of Meditation, hoping against hope that I could find an answer, because I was so depressed I could hardly move my body. I'd drag it to work each day and drag it home and look around the house, and there was no trace of her, and there was a big bed, and only my pillows were disturbed, and nothing in the baby's room but blue walls, and it was really, really hard for whatever I was at that time. Let's see, I would have been 19, I guess. And so I looked in The Art of Meditation. There must be an answer, and I saw the chapter, For Love is of God. And in that chapter, I can still remember without opening it, it said, the only way we can love God is by loving His creation, for God and His creation are one. And so I made the decision to love God in His creation. I made a decision to love the invisible inside of everyone and everything, and I focused my entire being on that and on doing that. And I prayed without ceasing, hour after hour. And if I went to the local restaurant, I sat in there and ordered my dinner and a cup of coffee, and I prayed that prayer. How may I best be of service? Thy will be done. And, of course, what happened was so remarkable. It was one of the most powerful spiritual experiences I've ever had. And that is that though I started out pretending, I ended up feeling that presence inside of everyone and everything, because one night I was sitting in my couch, on my chair, which I like to meditate in, and I put aside The Art of Meditation and I closed my eyes, and that was the first time I felt this presence touch me on the side of the face. And it was beautiful. It was so loving and so tender. And it was God. And I felt with it a sense of peace, and I knew it was my Father, the very same Father that I woke up and dedicated this talk to today. And that Father, from then until now, that was 1973, this is 2014, there has never been a day that I don't feel that presence at some time. I feel it so often that I am perhaps spoiled now. But the first time I felt it was just so wonderful. And I fell in love with that presence inside of everyone and everything. And so I traded the individual dependent kind of love on one woman, one girl. I traded that in for love of God in the entire creation. And I have never fallen out of love with that presence. And though I know now that I and that presence are one, and that is the reality of my being, yet still, the love is there. I cannot remove it or change it. I love that presence. And my wife knows, my wife today, we've been married, next year will be 25 years, she knows that that presence is my first love, and she's second, and she's fine with that. But when I started to all this, the end of that story is that I went over to Don's house and I thanked him so much for introducing me to God, because I could have died without ever knowing God as an experience. I knew God as a theory before this. After this, I knew God as an experience, a continuing experience. So I went to Don and I said, "Oh, thank you. Here's, God's real, and I'm experiencing it now, and I know it, and I don't need you now because I know that this is real." And he said, "That's right." And he asked me if I'd go to church, a Unity church, and give a talk with him that night, a spiritual talk. And I said, "Okay," because to me that was something I could do for the Father. And I went, and I got up and talked for about 15 minutes, and we had a little break. We had some donuts and coffee, and then Don was to be the main speaker for an hour, and he got up and started talking, and 5 minutes into his talk, he fell over dead. He just fell over, collapsed right there. And the room broke out into pandemonium, and I went around the corner. Remember, I'm only 19. Don was 47, I think. I went around the corner, I sat down, and I got quiet as much as I could with the pandemonium breaking out, and I heard the words, "Behold, I shall make all things new." And from then until now, everything, in and out, has been made new. And so you see, Don stayed alive just long enough to introduce me to God, and then he moved on. It's just fabulous. I can't believe it myself, and I lived through it. However, I don't know why I told all that story. Perhaps someone needed to hear it, but what I started to say was that Joel says here, truth is a shocking experience. And I can remember when I sat there in my living room and she had run off, I realized perhaps for the first time that as a child of God walking the spiritual path, I would never have the normal human marriage or family life that was projected on TV or portrayed on TV, on television. Father Knows Best and the Nelsons. I would never have that. Leave It to Beaver. Never. Mine was to be a different path. And I remember how hard that was at 19 to come to grips with that I wasn't here on earth to have that. I was here to have something else. And so he says truth is shocking, and it is. And he reports elsewhere that he had been working with Christian Science and the principles in Christian Science and praying through mental means, when suddenly it came to him that the mind was not power. And he said that in one of the talks in the Thunder of Silence, and he said he did not realize it himself until the moment it came out of his lips. And he said apparently the people in the room didn't quite hear it clearly. They didn't quite understand it or grasp it, because when he got back to his room, he realized how shocking that was. It overthrew everything that he had learned up to that point. So truth is shocking. And those who are not prepared for a continuous bombardment of shocks should not undertake the search for truth. How about the truth that God's not in the human scene? How about the truth that we've learned that, or are learning, that God's not in the human mind? How about the truth that God never made a human being? That which was made was not made by God. How about the truth that everything that you see, hear, taste, touch, and smell is a mental image and isn't out there? It's an illusion. No illusion is ever externalized. How about the truth that the only thing that's out there, in here and everywhere, is God's omnipresence? How about the truth that there is no I, but Christ liveth? You see, truth is shocking. And so don't continue with the study if you're not going to be prepared to be to experience a continuous bombardment of shocks. Probably, he says, the first question should be, why is there so little fruitage from prayer? Why is there so little fruitage? If the search for truth were started in this particular year, he says, the seeker would receive many shocks in reading magazine articles written by ministers telling why people are meeting in small groups to pray. Now, this is right around the same time that the charismatic movement started in the Catholic Church. If you can remember, and I remember, I'm not Catholic, but I went to Mass some Christmases because I really enjoyed it. And I can remember how rigid all the masses were given in Latin. You couldn't understand a word. And they went through all these forms and rituals and incense and candles and Latin. And that was supposed to somehow be closer to God. Well, the people were unhappy. Yes, you went through all these rigid rules and regulations and religion, but there was no experience of the Spirit. Where's the Holy Spirit? And so this underground secret movement, charismatic movement, Pentecostal movement, was started, where people met in their living rooms seeking the Holy Spirit. And they began to experience it. Some would speak in tongues, some would experience healings and other things. So he's saying that people are meeting in small groups to pray. Why they are not meeting in large numbers in congregations, and why they are seeking outside their churches. So it's the same time period that people... It's kind of interesting to me, in a historical sense, to look back and see that on one side of town, people were trying to break free from the rigidity of the Catholic Church, and so they were meeting in their living rooms and having charismatic meetings in which they would experience the Holy Spirit. And on the other side of town, perhaps Joel was giving a talk and people were meeting in small groups and in meditation and experiencing the Spirit there. So you have to kind of look back historically and say something was happening in the 60s. And overall, the people of the world were beginning to, the youth anyway, and I was part of them, was beginning to say something's wrong with the establishment. And we had marches against the establishment and against Vietnam and whatnot. So there was a leavening or a big movement, a change in consciousness worldwide in the 60s. Actually started in the 30s, maybe even the 20s, and moved up through there. It's still moving. Anyway, so that's where he starts. He says, we're discussing prayer, and truth is shocking, so be prepared that prayer, true prayer, is going to be shocking. And if you started your search in 63, you might be aware that there's little groups of people breaking away from organized religion to find an answer, to find the Spirit. So finally he comes out and he says it. Here's the first shock. The prayers of human beings are not answered. Prayers that seek to improve the human scene are not answered. And gosh, I guess I remember that as a little child. When my parents divorced, God, please bring Daddy back, you know? It never happened. It was not answered. When I was very sick with tonsillitis, God, please let me get well. It didn't happen until I went to a hospital and had my tonsils removed. None of those prayers were answered for me. And he flat out declares here, the prayers of human beings are not answered. So if you're praying as a human being, he's telling you, forget it. Your prayers are not going to be answered. If you're praying for Uncle Johnny, Aunt Susan, if you're praying for your mom, dad, for your kids, for your grandkids, for your wife or your husband or your partner, your prayers are not going to be answered. I know it's quite shocking when you think about it. Then what are we to do? Well, he says in the Bible we read, the prayer of a righteous man availeth much. The prayer the world understands is not the righteous prayer that availeth much. All right, so we have clues already here. We have prayers of a human being are not answered, but the prayer of a righteous man is. Well, then somehow we have to become a righteous man, but what in the world is that? First of all, let it be revealed for all time that God cannot be influenced by man's prayers. If you think about that, and I've given it some thought, contemplate that. How can you move the infinite? Have you ever been up in a plane? I've been in a plane. And you look down at the patchwork quilt on the ground through the clouds, and you can see very tiny, tiny, if you're up high enough, you can still, I mean, if you're not too high, you can still see little cars going across bridges and down roads. If you're up a little higher, you can't even see that. You only see a patchwork of towns and clouds. If you're up even higher, you can see the stars and just the outline of continents. And if you're up even higher, you can only see, or out even farther, you can only see the round earth itself. And if you're out even farther, you can only see what looks like a star. And if you're out even farther, you can only see a galaxy. And if you're out even farther, you can only see the infinite. Now, sitting out there somewhere, gazing out at the infinite, there is a dot so small that you can't see it. It's smaller than a micro dot. And that is the entire planet Earth. And on that Earth, so small that you can't see it, is a house, or perhaps a city. Let's say a city. And in that city, so small that you can't even see it, is a house with a person in it. And that person is you. Now, you're talking about three or four micro dots in. How in the world can that move that infinite? That's silly. It's totally ridiculous. Yet that's the way we were taught. Get down on your knees and pray that God do this and God do that. Somehow we turn God into the servant. You know, that's what the world mind does, don't you? It reverses everything. We are supposed to be the servant of God, but the human mind gets a hold of it and just subtly moves it around to where God is our servant. All right, so he says here, first of all, let it be revealed for all time that God cannot be influenced by man's prayers. And this is what I started to say in the beginning. This talk was given in September of 1963, and in September of 1973, 10 years later, when I was going through that experience, when I was totally alone in my house, just after experiencing that feeling of the presence in my chair, a few nights later, sometime later in that month, or maybe even that week, I went in and I lay down on the bed to go to sleep so I could get up and go to work at 6. And I wasn't quite asleep. You know, when you're in that in-between place, you're not asleep, but you're not awake. You're kind of floating in there. And as I was floating in there, I heard a voice that said, God needs no prayer. God already is. Man needs prayer in order to let God is. And I jumped up and I wrote it down on a piece of paper, and I put it in the book Steps to Mystical Experience. But what that taught me way back there in 1973 is that we don't pray to influence God. No, God is, and God is ising. None of my prayers is going to move God to heal something or change something or improve something or supply something. No, none of my prayers moves God. God is, and God is ising. Then why? Why pray? And it was answered. I pray so that I can remember and rest and behold God ising. You see, true prayer is a beholding. It's reminding yourself throughout the day and night to behold, that you don't have to do anything. Just behold God ising. And so, the prayer of a righteous man would be exactly that. God needs no prayer. God already is. I need prayer in order to let God is. Man needs prayer in order to let God is. Or woman needs prayer in order to let God is. Okay? All right. So, he says the prayer that has been found to be effective is the prayer in which you surrender your wishes, your desires, and your will to God. And so there it is. We're in total agreement. But I don't agree with Joel because I read this in this book here. And he's the master, so I agree with him. No, I agree because in my own experience, God spoke it to me from my inner being. God needs no prayer. God already is. Man needs prayer in order to let God is. That's what he said. That's what I heard. That's what I wrote. And that's what I live by. So that's why I'm in agreement. Because my experience is the same. He says it is the prayer in which you open your consciousness in order that God may fulfill its plan in you or through you. I pray that thy will be done and not mine. Now, when I was going through this inner experience of aloneness every day, that's what I prayed. Thy will be done. It's your ball game. It's your show. How may I best be of service? Pour out a blessing through me. Those thoughts went with me constantly. The first element of prayer, of real prayer, is humility, says Joel. Remember Paul's, I know not how to pray, but the Spirit maketh intercession? There it is. He says, the humility of which I speak is not a depreciation of yourself, but rather an acknowledgement that you yourself have no power. Yes, it's not a matter of, I am nothing, I'm just nothing. No. It's I of myself am nothing. But this I, when it fulfills itself through me, is all. And so I can do all things through Christ. It doesn't mean I'm nothing. It means of myself I am nothing. There's quite a difference. Your attitude of prayer would be that God's grace, God's presence, and God's power be released. There must be an absolute conviction within you that your prayers are not power. Your prayers are the instrument through which God's presence and God's power is released. So there's this, a little subtle difference here. It's not that you're nothing. It's that of yourself, of your human mind and human body, by might or by power, you are nothing. But by my Spirit, when you're an instrument for that Spirit, then you can do all things. Then he talks about going to New Zealand and there being a prediction of an earthquake, but he did not sit down to try to get rid of an earthquake. He says, by opening our consciousness to the realization of omnipresence, omnipotence, and omniscience, the presence and power of God was released. Now there it is again. Remember, if you need to read this again and again, or go look at that part in Steps to Mystical Experience, that chapter called Let God Is. God needs no prayer. God already is. Remind yourself of that. You are not sitting here to influence God. There's nothing you're going to say that's going to suddenly move God through your being, or move God out there into the universe, or move God to build a temple, or anything. You cannot move God. Forget it. And so God already is. But you need to experience that isness, and the only way you can do that is by becoming still. The only way you can do that is to let go and let God is, and then live as a beholder. And so when he sat down into meditation, it was to open his consciousness and behold omnipresence, omnipotence, and omniscience. And that's how it was released, by opening consciousness. He says the earthquake did happen, but the tidal wave was dissipated before it ever reached New Zealand. It was not that we or our prayers had power, but the opening of consciousness to the presence of God brought forth the power to do as it will, not as you outline. This is the point I would make. God is. You see, he came to the same thing in his inner experience that I did in mine. Man needs prayer in order to let God is. God needs no prayer. God already is. Man needs prayer in order to let God is. And so the point I would make is God is. There is a God of infinite power, and that God is closer than breathing. Here, now, in this room, right there where you are listening to this. But it is also here now, wherever you may be or wherever anyone else may be. The presence and power of God does not perform miracles until an inner stillness has been attained. And in this stillness, the presence and power of God is released. There's that word again, released, released, released. It came to me as let God is. And the stillness, let God is. It came to him as in the stillness, God is released. It's the same thing. Then, you ask, if God is omnipresent, what is the explanation for so many catastrophes? And the proven answer, it's proven, is the activity of God, the presence of God, and the power of God is functioning only where God is realized. In the absence of the realization of God, God is not functioning. So, whenever you read God is omnipresent in any of the Infinite Way writings or any other writings, you might want to remind yourself that's an incomplete sentence. If you say to yourself, well, God is omnipresent, so I don't have to worry about it, you're lying. You're lying. That's an incomplete sentence. God is not omnipresent. God is not omnipresent. God is functioning only where God is realized. That's the whole key. You must have this inner movement. You must have this inner presence move itself, or flow, or speak, or speak the word, pour forth. When that is felt, that is realization. And when you have realization, then God is functioning. Then God is released. Without that, God's not released. It's just an idea or concept in the mind. So, remember, in the absence of realization, God is not functioning. So the complete sentence would be, God is omnipresent where God is realized, or where God is released, or where you behold God ising. Out of 100,000 people, only 15 people traveling to the Lord's are healed. The activity of God operates only in the experience of those who open their consciousness to it. And the 15 were probably presenting themselves to God in silence, that the will of God be done. This is so important. Again, what is he advocating? He is saying that even in your praying and meditating, you must die. You must die. Any human effort, any human ways, any human thoughts, any human prayers, even and most especially in your meditation, you must die that God might live. In an investigation of those 15 cases, it was learned they did not pray for themselves, they prayed for others. Greater love hath no man than to lay down his own life that another might be saved. He says, I do not ask anyone to accept the revelations which have been given to me. I merely state them. And whoever feels an answering response and wishes to adopt them can do so. Yes, and I didn't accept them because he stated them. I never met the man. Well, that's not entirely true. I've met him in the inner planes, but not while he was on Earth. Although we lived in the same city once upon a time in San Gabriel before he moved to Hawaii. So, maybe as a child I saw him in the grocery store. I don't know. But anyway, what do you think would happen if any nation or people would say to its government, under no circumstances will we consent to throwing of a bomb? Now, he's big on this. He's given this a lot of contemplation. You hear it come up quite a bit. He is convinced that if a whole nation would say that, it would bring an end to war. He says someone at some time must break the cycle of fear, the cycle of self-preservation. The first law of human nature is self-preservation. But the first law of God is, greater love hath no man than to lay down his own life that another might be saved. Only in losing your life can you save it. So you might put it this way. The first law of world mind is self-preservation. The first law of God is dying to self. And there we have the difference. So even in our prayers now, we must be dying to self. So if you're going to God hoping for a cure or hoping for a better relationship or hoping for supply, if you're going for the loaves and fishes after all this time and after hearing all these talks, well, you're praying amiss. That's a human prayer, and as we started, human prayers are not answered. Something else must take place in your being, in your inner temple. He says, I have witnessed the same result, or the same principle, in families where one individual is willing to surrender victory for justice. So, the principle is, he who loses his life shall find life eternal. In prayer and meditation, die out of self, that Christ or Spirit or God may function. When we approach a healing ministry, approach it with the realization that our motive for prayer is that God's grace function. We are an instrument for God's grace only in the degree in which we approach prayer without an attempt to influence or direct God, and can relax. Yes, I have people that are still coming to me daily. I receive emails, sometimes phone calls, about my ears, my legs, my supply, about my marriage, about my job. These are all personal. These are all the first law of nature, self-preservation. And they want me to pray for them. They want me to pray for the human scene. And of course I say, I will go to work for you immediately. But I don't believe that. In my inner being, I'm not working for any human beings. And as soon as you hang up, I do my best to forget all about you. No. I'm going into prayer so that the impersonal may reveal itself where you have been appearing. And how it appears is not up to me. I can't pour that into a funnel and say, over here you need to appear as a better throat, and over here you have to appear as a better job, and over here you have to appear as a better mate. I can't do that. I have no idea how it's going to manifest. I can only do what he says in my meditation, and so can you, if you're going to pray aright, and that is die to self and any ideas I have, and stand so still, so stock still, that I can bear witness to the movement of spirit. And then how it forms itself is, well, I had a lady call me. She said, would you pray for me? She didn't tell me what the problem was, or maybe she did. I don't know. I don't remember. But she was adamant that I pray for her. And I said, okay, I'll go to work for you. And I did. And I sat in my chair, and I had a wonderful experience of the presence. And the next day or two, I received this email, and she said something like, well, you prayed for me, or you meditated for me, and I experienced yesterday 2 flat tires and this other problem over here, and so thanks for praying. That was the reply I got. And in my meditation, I had a wonderful feeling of the presence. So, he's going to say here that, well, I'll read it to you. First, God has never created a disaster. God has never created a sin or a disease. Now, that's important. In our childhood, in my childhood, I was taught that God brings these plagues upon the people that are sinning. And none of that's true. Therefore, he says, don't be afraid. With a full heart, you can open your consciousness to the experience of God's grace. Thy will be done. And then rest in that word. Rest and be a beholder. And watch what things take form by virtue of God's grace. Surrender your will, surrender your desires, and bear witness. You will see what great things God does through the consciousness of those who open consciousness in this pure spirit. What a wonderful, wonderful example of true prayer, of letting God is. So he says, God is not man's servant. God does not function to do man's will. Man is a servant of God. As you open yourself to God as a servant, as a son, you may be assured that God fills your consciousness. And then those who touch your consciousness are blessed to the limit of their capacity to receive. All who touch your consciousness will not be blessed, because many are seeking the loaves and fishes and not God. And so this person that had the flat tires and whatnot were obviously seeking loaves and fishes and not God. And I get so many requests for the loaves and fishes. It's strange, too, because these very same people are reading the same books that I'm reading. How come, I wonder to myself, they're still seeking the loaves and fishes? Don't you know that if you sought God and this inner experience of God, your problems would be met? Because harmony of body, harmony of relationships, harmony of pocketbook, this is the added things from the inner God experience. But no, they're still seeking the things, and they get very irate when they don't get them on their timetable. And I just plug along. Sometimes I tell somebody, now you just have to stop seeking the things. Sometimes I just don't feel pushed to say anything. Kind of let them have the joy of discovery. Okay, so once you learn to open yourself to God without a desire, only that God's will and God's grace be done through you, then you will witness the miracle of prayer fulfilled. You see, this whole chapter is the prayer of the righteous man. God is. See, I experienced this for myself way years and years and years before I ever laid eyes on this chapter. And so I already was living this principle. And reading this chapter was simple, aha, yeah. There's another one that's experienced this. And so in this chapter, the prayer of a righteous man is the prayer of surrender. Thy will be done, not mine. It's the prayer of resting back and bearing witness to God ising. And then you will witness the miracles that take place. I cannot go to God with a request that you be healed. Now this is Joel Goldsmith, the healer, speaking. I cannot go to God with a request that you be healed, physically, mentally, financially, or any other way. I cannot go to God and pray for your employment, your success. That would be as fruitless a form of prayer as we witness in the world in general. No, when you seek me for the benefit of prayer, I open my consciousness, realizing God's presence. Now, see, that's all he does. He said it before. By the time he hangs up the phone, he's forgotten you. Then he moves into meditation, and he forgets any sense of a practitioner. He dies to self. And then I open my consciousness, realizing God's presence, God's power, God's grace. And then I am still until something within me indicates that God is on the field. He feels that inner movement. I may not know what you're seeking prayer for. I am always hoping that you are seeking the further realization of His presence. Amen. God is light. Where the presence of light is realized, there is no darkness. The presence of God dispels it. Yes, where it's realized. And I really had to grapple with that myself. What is this realized? I don't understand. Because I understand sometimes that God is light, or I understand that God is omnipresent, yet the problem continues. It goes on and on. What is this realized? And I've even gone into meditation. Joel, what is this realized? Come on, let your consciousness impart it. My consciousness. We are one consciousness. What is realized? And I've grappled with it. I don't know how it is for you. I don't know if you just have a lovely Sunday morning out in the sun on your patio reading a chapter out of Consciousness Transformed, and then you go about your day. Perhaps it's really simple for you like that, and you get it. I don't. I take these principles within, and I grapple with them, and I wrestle with them, and I pound on the table. I'm not getting this. What is this? And I go back into meditation. I look again. If I'm led to a book on the topic, I go look at that, and then I go back into meditation. I go back into meditation. I go back. I go back. I go back until suddenly there's revelation, there's a light shed on what realization is, so that I know now what it is and whether or not I've had it in my meditation. I call it a movement, because I can feel the actual spirit coursing through me, invisibly, moving through my being, which is also invisible. He calls it realized. He says we need not fear to go to God in sin, Yes, please, if you have a feeling of guilt or some reason why you feel you shouldn't go to God, some secret that you're hiding, maybe even from yourself, just stop. Just stop. All of that's on the human level, and none of it matters. God never made a human being. And so if all of that's on the human level, it's certainly not something that God can even see, because God is too pure to behold human. So go to God, no matter what you're doing, no matter what you're sinning. I don't care if you have a gambling disorder, or you're an alcoholic or an addict, or you have a sexual addiction. I don't care if you're being demanding or critical. I don't care if you're sloppy or lazy. I don't care, and neither does God. Go to God that way, and die to that in your inner temple, and stand still and watch God ising. And in that ising, that light, will dispel the darkness. It's not something you earn or are worthy of. That's ridiculous. That's all human religion. That's the reason people broke away, to find some answers. So he says, we need not fear to go to God in sin. As a matter of fact, the deeper the sin, the greater the need for God. Acknowledge the sin, and then open your consciousness to the realization of God's grace, and be assured the sin will disappear and evaporate. As you have learned in the infinite way, since you have experienced the fruitage of prayer, you must pray for the benefit of this entire world. Again, he's trying to lift us up. Come on. Come on. Stop being a human being stuck in the mire of humanhood. Lift up, lift up. Come out of metaphysics trying to demonstrate loaves and fishes. Come up higher. Come on. Come up into mysticism, where you are the Son of God, and where your job is to be the Christ to the world. Ye are the light of the world, if so be that the Spirit of God is in you. And so he's trying to lift you out of praying for yourself or your family or your community. Pray for the world. Pray that God's grace be active in the consciousness of mankind. Do not make the mistake made in the religious world of praying for God to improve the human being or the human scene or the human world. Pray that the Son of God be revealed in individual man. Pray that the Son of God be raised up in individual man. Pray that God's government reign on earth. Unless you are praying that God's government be revealed on earth, you are praying amiss. Yes, if you pray for any specific thing, then your great human wisdom, also known as world mind, is trying to influence the infinite. The only thing you can do is stand still and let God pray. That's the other thing that came to me. I made a talk on that several years ago. I don't remember the name of it. I could go look it up, but I'm not going to do that right now. It's on the website, and it has to do with man doesn't pray. Spirit prays within man. In your innermost heart, your prayer must be that the kingdom of God be established in the hearts and souls of men, that God's government rule the consciousness of mankind, that all men subject themselves unto the wisdom and the will of God. If you and I cannot meet this requirement in our individual lives, do not try to pray this way for the world. So he's telling you there, you're not ready. If you have not submitted and surrendered yourself in your day-to-day affairs, I remember for myself when it became, I played a little game with myself to remember once an hour. I was working in a factory. This was also in 1973. And I played a little game with myself to look up at the clock once an hour, take a deep breath and say, thy will be done, or it's your ball game, or it's your show, or you take over. And in that way, I submitted myself, because at least 24 times a day, I was pausing for a moment to let God is. You see? Beautiful, huh? That's how it happened to me. Nothing I did, I just sort of was led that way. So he says, if you cannot meet this requirement in your individual life, then do not try to pray for this for the world, because you're not ready. First of all, he says, place yourself in subjection to God. Pray that your soul and mind and body be subject unto God. Pray that the will of God be established in you. Repeat this reminder within yourself many times a day. Let thy will be done in me. Let thy wisdom rule me. Let thy love flow through me, that I may be wise, loving, benevolent, just. You surrender yourself to God's government, to the reign of God, to that spiritual center. And that's exactly, I discovered the same thing, but I discovered it through my experience, not because I read this book. And yet, by reading this book, there's the feeling, ha, my brother, he found the same thing. We are walking the same path. We are disciples of the inner Christ. Let's look at that for a moment. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Now this is in the front of every Infinite Way book, and it must be the most top principle that Joel feels is important, and that is that inner spirit build your house. Otherwise, you labor in vain if you build it. Illumination dissolves all material ties and binds men together with the golden chains of spiritual understanding. It acknowledges only the leadership of the Christ. You see, I acknowledge the leadership of the internal Christ. Not Joel, not Herb, not even Jesus, but the internal Christ. And when I first met, the very first day I spoke to Herb, that was the first thing I said when he opened his hotel room, because it was time for my private session, and I crossed the threshold, I said, I need to tell you, you're not my teacher, I have a teacher within. And his response was to ask me if I would work with some of the students. And so, my teacher, the one who has taught me these principles, is the inner Christ, and so is the teacher of Joel. And so it says it acknowledges only the leadership of the Christ. It has no ritual or rule but the divine, impersonal, universal love. No other worship than the inner flame that is ever lit at the shrine of spirit. So the only thing that we are worshiping now are not plastic statues of Jesus or Joel or Herb. We are worshiping the inner flame, the inner spirit, which is invisible, and it's ever lit at the shrine of spirit. This union is the free state of spiritual brotherhood, and that's what I experience when I read this paragraph. Ah, my brother Joel has experienced the same exact thing. The only restraint is the discipline of soul. Yes, you must discipline yourself, and in that case, in my experience, it was once an hour. It has since become even more than often than that at times. Therefore, we know liberty without license. We are a united universe without physical limits, a divine service to God without ceremony or creed. The illumined, those living this way, well, they walk without fear. They walk by grace. And so that's what you can look for if you're surrendering yourself to God's government and to your spiritual center, then you will walk without fear by grace. He says, each one of you has been entrusted with a husband, child, wife, business, something has been given into the care of each of you. Therefore, you must realize, I do not have sufficient wisdom to fulfill this. So I open my consciousness that I may have the benefit of God's grace, God's wisdom, God's love, God's benevolence, God's justice, to fulfill the little trust that has been given to me. It becomes necessary first for every individual who has learned to subject himself to God's government to pray that the reign of God be established in all human consciousness throughout the globe. So, if you have first demonstrated this principle in your individual life, then you are ready to pray for the world and do some world work. We're running over a little bit. I hope you don't mind. It's an hour right now, but we've almost completed the chapter. So, he says, we cannot pray what they shall do. We must pray only for the realization of God's grace, that the Son of God be lifted up in all mankind, that God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Then rest, relax, and be a beholder. And what does that mean? He says that a lot, that the Son of God be lifted up. How do you pray that the Son of God be lifted up? Well, again, that's something you take into your temple and you grapple with it and you wrestle with it and you ask and, if necessary, plead until it's revealed to you. We know that the Son of God is, and we made a talk on that too, which I rather like, called Even So Must the Son of Man, or Must the Son of Man Be Lifted Up, or the Son of God Be Lifted Up. It's in the Uncomfortable Talks. But how do you do it? What is it? Well, the Son of God, of course, is that inner indwelling presence that moves through your being. When you have died to self in your meditation. And so how is it lifted up? It comes out of the tomb, from behind the humanhood where you had it hidden. And it flows out here and forms itself. That is lifting it up out of the tomb. And so you must pray that the Son of God be lifted up in all mankind. Ha-ha. Then rest, relax, and be a beholder. When prayer is rightly understood, it brings all of God's wisdom, power, and all of God's peace into this room, or this house, or this business, community, nation, or this world. We can afford to give all our time to learning the nature of prayer. Learning to solve our problems will wait. Learning the nature of prayer will not wait. And that's what I have a hard time getting across. If you find God, these other things will be met. That's the added things. He says, when the Master said, my peace I give unto you. Well, as we learn in prayer to let the Christ peace flow from us to our neighbor, whether saint or sinner, friend or enemy, that is the measure of the peace that returns. And so, this is a beautiful statement, a beautiful scripture, a beautiful Christ message, my peace I give unto you. But did you know that you can have only the peace that you release from that inner spirit? The peace that I give unto you is the peace that you release, and there's the word release again. You have the Christ buried in a tomb of humanhood. In your meditation, as you die, in each meditation, you release my presence, my light, my peace. And that is the presence, the light, the peace that returns unto you. Finally, these are six wonderful words right here. Prayer is an activity of God. You see? Now listen. Again, what came to me 10 years after this talk in 1973. God needs no prayer. God already is. And that tells me I cannot influence the infinite. Man needs prayer in order to let God is. And God ising is the activity of God. So prayer is the activity of God. And so prayer is God ising. God is the only one that can is. You can't is for God. But in the death of yourself, your human self, your human desires, your human will, thoughts, concepts, in the recognition and realization that God needs no prayer from you, from a human, that the prayers of a human are not answered, in that shocking realization and the accompanying standing stuck still or stop in that emptiness, God prays. We call that the movement of spirit, the activity of God, or God-ising. So the secret you must demonstrate is this. You do not pray. God does the praying. And there you need to take that as a cone into your meditation this week and maybe longer until you get it. You do not pray. God does the praying. You do not pray. And so if you ever think again, I need to pray, you're wrong. You do not pray. You see, we're never going to live that life we saw on TV with Father Knows Best. You do not pray. God does the praying. We are different kinds of beings. We're spiritual beings. And in our inner temple, God flows in and does the prayer. We listen. We behold. We witness. We are open to the activity of the Spirit within. And so I acknowledge, he says, I am not going to pray, God. I am here only to be the transparency through which thy presence prays and thy Spirit makes intervention with the spirit of man. Open yourself consciously to the experience of being still and knowing that I is God, and then letting it bear witness and perform its miracle. Perfect yourself first individually in prayer in the sense of being open, that God may pray or bear witness in you or through you. Be empty. Be so empty. Then you will experience why the Master said, I can of mine own self do nothing. The Father doeth the works. He let the Spirit of God bear witness with his Spirit and perform its functions. When you witness that once and experience some fruitage of the Spirit of God bearing witness within you, you will say, praying without ceasing is not long enough. I must have even more time for prayer. You will then be able to see what happens on earth when God has an outlet, an opening. And so I repeat what came to me in 1973. Perhaps you thought it was a cute little statement in that book. I had one lady I showed it to who said her only comment on it was, this is not proper English. It should be... She missed the principle entirely. But very intellectually, she said, it should be man needs to let God be, or something like that. She said, this let God is, what is that? That's incorrect English. Boom, went right over her head, and she totally missed it. I hope now, it's been all these years later, if she's still walking on earth, that she gets it. And so what was revealed to me is the essence of this chapter. God needs no prayer. God already is. Man needs prayer in order to let God is. Thank you. And on this Father's Day, Father, I give you this talk as my gift, my emptiness that you may pour through. Thank you.